Hey guys, as Bernie said, my name is Ken Schneider. I'm here to tell you how a 70-year-old brand speaks social, or better yet, how we do organic content strategy. I'll give you some pointers there. A little bit about myself. I graduated at ASU with a fine arts degree. Got out, did some freelancing for a few years. Decided to move into the corporate world, make some money. Did a marketing coordinator, moved my way through that. I did everything from graphic design to CRM, database segmentation, email marketing. Kind of done a lot of different things through my career. The one thing that I've found that I love and have a really good passion for is content marketing. I love getting our customers from point A to point B, helping them along that journey, and kind of just providing the content for them to answer those questions that they have. Been at U-Haul for a little over a year now, leading the social media team and doing exactly just that, providing our customers the answers to their questions and helping them with their moving journey. A little bit about U-Haul. You know, I don't know if anybody has moved with U-Haul. I have. I'm sure most of you have. You know, we have a few stats that go around, and it's that the average person moves 11 times in their lifetime, and they move approximately every 3 years. I've moved 11 times in my lifetime already, so I'm not done by any stretch. But this is basically the idea that our company was founded on in 1945. Mr. Ellis Schoen here, he was a Navy veteran coming out of World War II, and he was trying to move him and his wife from Los Angeles to Portland, and he wanted to rent a trailer to do so. And back in 1945, you couldn't do that. You couldn't go from city to city. It was only in local areas that you could rent the trailers for $2 a day. So what he did is he packed him and his wife with everything that he owned in his car and drove up to Portland. And basically on that way, on that journey, the U-Haul was born. The idea of what U-Haul was born. By the end of that year, within 6 months, he had over 30 trailers in Portland and the Seattle area. And within 4 years, you could rent a trailer from city to city pretty much throughout the United States. So the growth was really big. 70 years later, we are still, you can still do that. We're the leader in the do-it-yourself moving industry. And as you can see, we do offer more than just trailers now. We have trucks. We are the leader in hitch installations. So we install more hitches than anybody else for your vehicles. We are the leading propane dealer in the United States. And we have the largest self-storage network as well. Kind of the cool thing about U-Haul that I didn't know before I started working there was that U-Haul really is an American company, and we really truly embody the DIY culture. So everything that we do, we try and do in-house, everything that we possibly can. So our trailers are built from the ground up at our own manufacturing plants. The box on the box trucks, besides the engine and the chassis, are built by U-Haul employees. We hold hundreds of patents for our trailer hitches, portable storage we make. We also have our own box manufacturing plant. So really cool. We do all of our stuff as much as we can in-house. So a little bit about our customers. There's approximately 16 million people that move every year. And about 65% of those moves happen in 3 months between Memorial Day and Labor Day. Really busy time for us coming up. So we produce a lot of stuff around that time. But what we do, and kind of the reason why we got into social is actually quite simple. It was our customers. Our customers were on social before us, and they were talking to us and about us. We were not there. We were just doing our own little thing. So what we did is we corrected that, and we solved a lot of those problems. And to give you a little bit of an insight, last year, we did, during our moving season, we had over 100,000 inbound messages that our team responds to. And 56% of those were responded to in less than 15 minutes. And 70% We're in less than 30 minutes. So for us, a lot of the inbound messages are really important, and this is, it kind of serves two purposes. We're serving our customers, and we also take that data and that information, and we guide our organic content strategy around some of that. I'll cover that in a little bit, but we had to solve that problem quickly, and I think we have in a really short time. And what we want to do is make these numbers even higher. We want to have a higher response rate and quicker as much as possible. So kind of leads me into what our content strategy is, and it's pretty simple. We want to provide content that our customers are actually looking for and when they need it. We do this a couple different ways, but what I want to cover just a little bit with you guys, this isn't the extensive list, but we do that by blogs, we do that with social, Pinterest, and we use our customers as well. So with our content calendar, as you guys might do the same, but you ask yourself, what do we write about? How do we create content that my customers or your customers will find useful? Well, what we do, it's, again, quite simple. We use our customers. We use what their customers are already giving us. If you remember those 100,000 messages, we take what they're saying, we tag it appropriately, and we look at trends, we look at topics, we look at specific questions, and we create content around that. Run through some examples for you so you guys can kind of see. Moving boxes. People ask us all the time, where can I get moving boxes? Where can I find moving boxes? Someone help. Well, what we do is we'll turn around and we'll create a blog post about 8 best places to get free boxes. Now, we can do a couple different things with this, but what we do is we can respond to those answers or those questions and give them a link to this and say, hey, here's some ideas, and we're providing that value to them. Now, on this blog post, we're obviously linking to where they can purchase them as well if they want. It comes full circle on that purchase. Another example here, cargo vans. We have cargo vans, and a lot of people, we get a lot of questions about what fits in those things. And here's a couple, just people are wondering, does a king-size mattress fit? Does a queen-size mattress fit? We could respond simply by saying yes or no, but what we find value in is we'll respond with this really cool graphic, and it goes down a little bit further, but it gives different, what fits into different moving vans or cargo vans. So no, a king-size mattress won't fit in a cargo van. You'll have to get our 10-foot moving truck. And we're able to do that as well. And then obviously we link back to them to reserve something if they want. A few more here. We have truck sizes. It's another question that we get all the time is, you know, I have a 1,200 square foot apartment. What size moving truck do I need? Or I have this really large couch. What size do I need to fit? So what we do is we respond. Again, we have a real simple blog post. We break down each one of our trucks and what fits in it. You know, different if you have large furniture or if you have a lot of boxes, things like that. So we're able to respond. And what we do is we point our customers to these blog posts. And they can find it as well, obviously, the other ways with Google searching and things like that. Here's two more. We have people talking about moving into their first apartment. And the one thing I'll point out here, and you might have seen a couple others, but these are not at U-Haul mentions, or they don't mention U-Haul anywhere in the tweet. What we do is we use social listening tools. And so we'll go out, we'll listen to the internet, and on certain topics that we're looking for, packing, moving, storage, all of those things, and we can inject ourselves in the conversation. So people tweeting about moving into their first apartment, my community management team can provide a link to this article, this blog post on, hey, here's some tips, why don't you check it out? And obviously on this post here, we have a bunch of call to actions and things that they can do. So it's really nice that we provide content for our community management team to be able to have conversations with our customers, even though they may not be talking directly with us, but we can be in the conversation as well. So speaking of blogs, or articles, or really whatever whatever you want to call them. What I say is they are a must. If you guys don't have a blog or articles or something like that, you have to have a repository. You have to have somewhere that your content's going to live, somewhere that you're going to be able to answer your customers' questions. And if you don't, you need to get on the board there. What we do, we currently publish 5 to 7 blog posts a week per blog, and we run 2 blogs at U-Haul. So we're publishing a lot of content, but that's what we felt worked for us. Doesn't necessarily mean that's what's going to work for you. Start small, move up. The other thing what we do is we also create an original pin per blog post as well. And I'll kind of walk through that here right now. So we have this blog post that we just talked about a few minutes ago. We had people asking us about, or we injected ourselves into these conversations. So we responded with this blog, moving into your first apartment. What we do is we create a pin, simple pin, nothing crazy. It's pretty easy. We use a couple different tools like PicMonkey, Canva, PictoChart. There's a ton of free tools out there that we can create this stuff. It's real easy, text overlays, things like that. So basically, we're publishing a bunch of pins as well, 5 to 7 original content pins per blog per week. And then obviously on top of that, we have a bunch of other stuff that we're trying to push from sales or anything else that we're looking at publishing. But what I kind of want to show you here is the power and frustration that Pinterest can provide. So this specific blog post, you'll see, we published November 20th, 2013. And I know it's a little hard to read, but you'll see this big flat line. That flat line basically represents 10 months between we published the article, the pin was published shortly after, and then it sat there for 10 months. And you guys might see this if you guys are doing some things like this, but it's really frustrating to an extent where you write this great blog, you provide this great content for your customers, you push it out on social, you do everything right, and you think you know you're gonna hit a home run on this thing, and you sit back and you wait for the traffic to come in, and it just doesn't. Sometimes that's just not the case. But the nice thing here is the beauty of Pinterest, and what happened with us is, as you can see, Pinterest happened. We got repinned, and we got repinned a lot. This is just one of those pins that resonated with our audience, and people loved it. To date, this pin has been repinned over 15,000 times. So, cool. Good job, great work. We're done, right? We can move on. Not so fast. So we had this pin. We got a lot of traffic. It's been a home run for us for the most part. We had great traffic for well over a year. And then last year we noticed a little bit of a downturn. We started to see our dip in traffic, and this helps because we monitor things continuously. And so what we did, we realized that sometimes our content gets old, sometimes it's outdated, sometimes it's just not as effective anymore. So what we did is we got together and we looked at our posts that we wanted to refresh, make that content new again. And so we took our top posts, this happened to be one of them, and we did a few things to it. So we added the top graphic there. It's not hard, we just wanted to create something that kind of really embodies what the article's about. So we did a little header graphic. We published a video exactly on this topic and had all the tips and tricks and different things on it within video format, which we were able to push out on our other social channels in different areas. We also did this, we added a new pinnable image. And I'll hit on this in a few minutes as well, but something that we do to refresh our content is we'll create a new pinnable image. So when new audience comes in and reads this, new readers come in, it's real easy that they can just repin this image directly to their boards, and we're able to see more traffic because of that. We also added some more graphics. Instead of blue links for, hey, here's the supplies you need and click to buy the supplies, we created a graphic around it. These are all clickable, and this is all stuff that we talk about in the post. So moving boxes or tarp or packing tape, you can click on that and purchase those things right from there. After the update, we did see an uptick in traffic. We've seen some good traction on social since we've updated this. It's still a little early for to call it a success or not, but We did see what we wanted to see. We did see an uptick. Now, the one thing I do caution everybody is every post is going to have its ups and downs. Look at trends. Look at, you just continually monitor it. If you start seeing it go the other way, then you might want to revert. We've had that case exactly where we changed out a graphic, the pinnable image, and we thought, this graphic's so much better. And we published it, and our traffic tanked. So we reverted it back, and then we recouped all that back. So organic social, this is kind of the no-brainer. Everybody should do this. If you're not, obviously, you guys are here for a reason. But the one key thing I will tell you, cats. Anything with cats are successful. So if you can incorporate cats, it will it'll help. I found this graphic from Avalanche, and I like it. But what it hits home for me is that, and it's a little hard to read, but it basically, each channel is unique. Each channel has its own audience. Don't treat each channel as one. Don't judge one by the other. What works on Twitter may not work on Instagram or vice versa. And as I always say, and I'll tell anybody, is don't spray and pray. You can't just post one thing on all your channels and expect it to work. So what we do is we develop and curate all of our content independently by channel. So I have different team members that manage different channels, and they create their own voice and tone based on who our audience is on that channel. Facebook, for us, we have a lot of team members that are on that channel. So we curate a lot of content that we know is going to resonate with those guys, with our employees. So treat each channel separately. Give it the attention that they deserve. Because if you don't, you'll kind of be left wondering why your organic social is not working. You need to find your voice and tone for each channel. Kind of move into Pinterest here. Pinterest for us is, or for me specifically and my team, is it is one of our most important channels going into 2016. It's my top area of focus, mainly because we have seen that Pinterest is one of, if not the largest traffic driver for our blogs organically. This is our Pinterest trend, and we're hoping to keep that rising and going into the right direction. So what we do on Pinterest, we do a few different things, but besides just pinning the pins to our boards and putting out our blogs and everything, we also add, and I mentioned this a minute ago, but we'll take a pin and we'll inject it into our blog post as well. So we'll take the pin that's blogging, that's linking to the blog, put it in there. That allows anybody that finds that blog via a different social channel or Google search or anything like that, allows them to pin it to their boards, which gets us a lot more traffic organically. And what we see is the results are there. We keep seeing our traffic go in the right direction, and we want to continue to see that go. Here's another example of a pin that we have. It's one of our more successful ones. The one thing I want to point out here is that we're not selling, we're not pushing our sales initiatives. What we're doing is we're providing content that our customers are looking for. And it allows them to see us as a thought leader. We're not always just pushing sales stuff down their throats. And so what we do is we see the results of our efforts here is we keep gaining traffic. Organically, our giveaways, this is like a, this is such an easy win, guys. This grill cover for us, I think it's like $20. We give it away, and we use hashtags, and we do all these different things with it. We don't even have a picture of the grill cover in our photo. And this, the Twitter one here has had well over 500 engagements, retweets, and all of that stuff. Facebook one here, the hitch cover, I think it's like $12. And we've had, I think, well over 150 engagements on Facebook. They're just easy. We use small items. The one thing that I say is we've done like larger items. We've given away GoPros and we've given away like $1,000 and we've done a lot of that stuff. And these are so much easier, and we get just as much engagement. It's unfortunate, but it's good for us. We don't have to give away large items. Find out what your audience wants and what your audience is into, what makes sense for your business, if it's a $25 Amazon card or whatever. But take small items, see if it works for you guys, and then if it doesn't, it doesn't. You can move on, but you just want to test and see if it works. That's what we do. So where we're going on social, the one thing, hopefully it still involves roads, because we're kind of dependent on those roads. But what we're doing, we're always experimenting. That's the big thing. We're experimenting with social selling, buy buttons, shoppable Instagram, social retargeting. We want to take our transactional data on our website and see who falls out of the funnel and retarget them on social, see if we can re-engage with them. We're going to be doing a lot more of that. We have a lot of tools that we're going to be implementing and launching. We look at blogger partnerships. We find really good value in there. We have real estate companies. We have Beazer Homes. We have Play Too Much out of New York. And we'll write for them, and they'll write for us. And those blogs always seem to provide more traction than all of the content that we write. They're always a little bit better. We're looking at media partnerships, BuzzFeed, Mashable, those kind of guys. Those are a little bit bigger than a lot of people, but there's other ones out there that are low cost and easy to do. Online publications, news, all of that sort of thing. The most important thing we're going to be doing is, obviously, we're going to continue to do the best organic content that we can. We're always going to be providing content that our customer wants and do it the best that we can. The last thing that we are moving into, and this isn't really the topic of this, what we're going into, but we are going to be utilizing paid. I think this morning was she put it well. The game's changed. We get it. It sucks. I know. I'm not happy about it. But if you guys aren't aware, this is just a graphic I pulled. But you know, 6% of your fans are going to see your content organically. So we have 20,000 fans on Facebook. I mean, that's not a good number. So we have to supplement our organic strategy with paid. We don't do a lot. We're doing small amounts of dollars per post, and we're just kind of adding and supplementing. We're able to reach new audience members and that sort of thing. The nice thing is we do see good results. We do drive click-throughs and increased engagements on our channels. That doesn't mean that you guys have to, but we have found that it's kind of a necessity for us at this point. What you need to really do is just see if it makes sense for you guys, and if it does, then test. Start small and run a little test, see if it works. If it doesn't, change a variable, keep the constant, and try something, and try it again. So a few of my takeaways. I think I'm running ahead, but my takeaways here, I have five. Basically, create content your audience wants. That's first and foremost. You know, if you're creating content that your customers don't care about, they're not going to read it. It takes time also. I know Bernie hit on that a little bit earlier on his previous session, but you know, you have to be patient. It's going to take time, especially organically. You have to conversate with your audience, listen to what they say. We do so. There's a lot of different tools that you can. You could do it just natively within the channels. But you have to conversate, because that way you can start the conversation. You know what your audience wants. You have to test if it's organic or paid. We run tests all the time, see if it works, see if it doesn't. If it doesn't work, we figure out why it didn't, and then we try again and test again. Treat each channel separately. You know, we can't always post about cats, so we have to, you know, find the audience on there, figure out who the audience is, and talk to them on a one-to-one basis as much as you can. Lastly, refresh content. We have posts that are 3-4 years old now, and we're continually looking at seeing what we can do to make them fresh again, reusing the content in a lot of different ways, adding things to it, taking it away, and doing all of that stuff there. And the thing, I, you know, mentioned just a second ago, the thing with organic content is that you guys need to acknowledge that it takes time to gain traffic and an audience. So we've done this for 4 years, and we're still not there. We're still trying to get our content in front of more and more people. But we realize it's not a race, it's a marathon. It's gonna take a while, especially on social and blogs. It took us a while to get an audience on our blogs. You don't need a large budget to make social work for you. The thing that you do need to do is be smart about the how and the what you're sharing. And lastly, think content first. No matter what you do, good content always wins. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken. We have a few minutes for questions, so we'll start right here. And as you know, we're going to use the mic, so here we go.
Hi there. Thanks for this great presentation. I have a question about your different channels that you're using, and I get the idea that you're developing different content for the different channels. What I'm curious about is, in your organization, what is your process or hierarchy of how the content is launched? Do you have a review process? Does everything go through you? And my own particular case, I have a small architecture firm. It's 50 people, right? And I have like two people doing it. And how do you keep the voice consistent when you have multiple people doing content and posts?
So we have a couple different things that we do. We do have an approval process for all of our content that goes out, and it does funnel through me at this time. At some point, we also have a longevity with our team. So I have certain people that I know that they know what they're doing. She's been at it for over 4 years. So I'm much more comfortable with her. So I think it's just a little bit of a timing thing for me specifically, is the more comfortable I get with people, the less I have to manage that voice and tone. But it's just, for me, it's mostly I continuously give them feedback on, maybe you should say it this way, or, this is, not how we would say it, or that sort of thing. I'm shortly kind of working on some guidelines and some, more strategy docs and things like that. We've had some transitions with leaderships and stuff, so those are things that we're working on as well. Is to have those guidelines, and that I think will help any business, is saying, this is our audience, this is the tone of voice that we want to maintain, and that kind of structure of a document would always help too.
Other questions? Yep.
Hi, my name's Alma, how are you?
Good.
So I work for a company called Simonize. We're actually a chemical manufacturing company for car wash and janitorial products. And we're 103 years old. So normally with that type of old brand, our demographics range from 35 to plus. Mm-hmm. And we're missing that entire millennial demographics. How do you target to them, even being a 70-year-old plus company as you all?
That's a good question. So we do have, we are a little bit different where we do have a product that is geared exactly for the younger demographic. We have a program called College Boxes where we ship boxes to college students. They put all their stuff in it. We come pick it up and we store it for the semester or over summer, and then we ship it back to them when they need it. So I talk about experimenting, and we did experiment with Snapchat this past year to try and reach that younger demographic. You got to look at, you have, so our core demographic is the older demographic. It's 35 to 55. But that doesn't mean we only talk to those people. A lot of things that we create are actually made for, I would say, the younger demographic. Most of the people on my team are, in that demographic. So I think as long as it resonates with us and we're putting it out there, it's going to work for the, across the board as well. I don't know if that helps or answers the question, but yeah. Well, I think there's some really good things when you talk about, like we're looking at, I'll use Facebook as an example just because it's easy, but with the targeting and the gating and everything that Facebook allows you to do, you can have different messages. We have the ability to do dark posts through our social tools, so we can post something that only shows up to certain demographics. So that might be something that you want to look at, where if I'm in the 35 to 55, I'm never going to see that content or that post. So that might be something that helps. And then just try and figure out the voice that you want to talk to that younger demographic. Sorry.
So my question is around your content. You've had some pretty tight content around your brand, and then you go out with the retweet to win type thing. In your arcing strategy of content, do you feel like those, engagement type posts are bringing in a different type of engaging consumer that you want? Do you feel like that is important to have in your strategy versus focusing on drilling down and targeting people that will be more of a brand focus rather than going for, I guess, the cheap win?
Yeah, so, I mean, we did notice that on specifically our Twitter giveaways, there's a lot of people that, I don't know the term for them, but they're just the people that go out and looking for the giveaways. And we see a lot of those, right? We've seen a lot of people follow our brand just because they know we're doing giveaways, and that's the only time they engage with us. The nice thing that we have seen, though, is we've seen an uptick just because we get more visibility on those type of posts, and we have a link somewhere in there linking to our product. We've seen an increase in traffic referrals from those specific posts to our blog, and we've seen revenue from just doing the giveaways. So we have found value. We've added the people maybe that are not exactly our fit, if you will, but we also saw the results, so we felt like it was worthy to continue.
Ken, I know a lot of us in this room probably are making a lot of content. I'm curious what you guys are doing in terms of differentiating your content as the market becomes saturated and competition grows.
We don't have competition. Sorry, repeat the question.
So especially related to blog content, when you're writing about five tips to move into your first apartment and stuff like that, bloggers are writing about that, other businesses and organizations are writing about that. What's your guys' strategy in order to continue to advance and develop the type of content you're creating? I know like the term like 10x content is growing. What types of things are you guys thinking about how you can continue to outperform or take over the competition in those areas?
So I think there's a couple different things that we're doing. I mean, I touched on paid a little bit. I think that's where it's just one of those things. I think that's where we're going to be able to always be a little bit better with them, is because we have the power, I guess, if you will, to get in front of more people. In terms of creating content, we've added staff in terms of like graphic designers and things like that to the team that will kind of take our content to the next level. In terms of creating long-form content, infographics, things like that, instead of some of the stuff I showed is pretty small and light. We want to create bigger and longer content. I've tasked the team to, instead of the 300 to 400 words, let's make sure it's 500 to 600, so we're ranking better. We also have domain authority when we talk about like Google search, so there's some of those factors that I think we're always going to be able to stay ahead of the game a little bit. But yeah, we always have people nipping at our toes, and we just got to make sure that at the end of the day, we're creating good content. If we start creating content that's too fluffy or that's not solving people's problems, we'll get pushed aside. But I think as long as we create good content, that's all that we need to keep doing.
We have time for two more questions, and I see two hands. But we need to keep them both brief.
How much demographic information is there out there across all the channels? We market to low-income families in Florida. So mm-hmm. Is there a way to know who's watching?
Certain channels, yes. Facebook is probably the most robust in that term, in that area. Excuse me, where we're able to get really granular either by zip code, by income levels. And I know Facebook, their data, they use third-party stuff that helps with that as well. So it is there. Certain channels, like Twitter's a little less, and then Instagram's the same as Facebook, so targeting there is the same. So, yeah, there is.
Great presentation, by the way.
Thank you.
We're very similar. I've resonated quite well. So my question really is about the conversations that take place. I would really like it if you could speak a little bit about how your team kind of deals with that. Do you have multiple people that answer those questions? Do you do a lot of that? And then, you know, if you have that delegated to other people, how do you train those people to respond in a way that, you know, is relevant to your brand?
Yeah, so we have, with 100,000 inbound messages, it's not myself doing all of those. I prefer to stay out of that realm. I do oversee a certain aspect of it. We moved just recently, we call them social cares. And so our cares team, they got kind of migrated to our chat team that handles our chat for our website. And so they were all trained by my staff. A couple of the people actually got moved as well up there and that sort of thing. It's really about, so we have a couple bulletins, if you will, primary service objectives, things like that, that really guide how we conversate with our customers. From a logistical standpoint, we have a social tool that brings all those in. There's a queue that they work off of. And then once it's responded, it goes into like a QA queue that where my community management team will look at it and make sure it's responded to in an appropriate way. And if we realize it's not, then we can train and we kind of retrain. It's a continual process. It's nothing that we tell them how to do it and then we move on, but it's that's kind of the process that we use.
Awesome, thanks.
Thank you.
All right, Ken, thank you so much for sharing your insights from U-Haul. Let's hear for Ken Schneider.
Thank you.